two. Hello, world, and welcome to Search for Calling. My name is Ken Payne. I'm the number one process executive recruiter in the world, along with my guest, Ray Skeens and Michael Manning. Michael Manning is a dynamism clearing practitioner, and Ray is an executive who has agreed to come on today's show and share his experiences in life as it pertains to being a client for executive search, and also his experiences in clearing, dynamism clearing, with Michael Manning and Enid VN, and to also testify to the web-based software, WillTel Solutions, which provides me, a person here, the opportunity to get my two good friends here. Wanted to go over Michael Manning's background. Michael?
Yes.
Hey, Michael Manning. Why don't you go over your background, Michael?
Okay. I'm a dynamism clearing practitioner. I was trained by Ingrid and her husband, David. I did some clearing initially with David, and I was so impressed with the results I'd gotten. I tried a whole bunch of other things, therapy and hypnotism and NLP, firewalking, a whole bunch of different things, but I got so much better results with dynamism than anything else I'd ever tried. I was so impressed by it that I went back and got trained by them, and I'm now a dynamism clearing practitioner. I'm currently living in the Vancouver, Washington area. It's in the southwest corner of Washington, right across the river from Portland. My number is 805-965-2494. And I'm also willing, under the right circumstances, to travel to a location where a client is to do clearing in their hometown.
Awesome. What is your website?
Well, there's a couple ways. Enid's website is dynamism.org. My personal website is highestbidofall.com, or you can get me through Ken's website, which is bellwave.org.
Let's go over the website for Enid. Dynamism, that's D-Y-N-A-M-I-S-M, dynamism.org. So you were sharing with us you're available for travel. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I have traveled to Northern California. I've done some clearing in Southern California. Right now I'm in the Portland, Vancouver area. And I've also been to Colorado within the last 9 months.
Super.
Like I said, under the right circumstances, I'm happy to travel somewhere to help somebody.
Okay, good. So I want to go over Ray's background. Hey, Ray, how you doing?
Good, and you?
I'm really good. Where are you located now?
At the moment, I am in southwest Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, a little town called Frederick.
Frederick, Oklahoma.
Frederick.
So, going over the experiences of your life as an executive in the quality and manufacturing management circles, you've had the opportunity to work with a various number of executive recruiters.
Yes.
You were actually, you found your way out in Oklahoma through an executive search practitioner, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I've got an extensive network, at least from the recruiter standpoint. This last job search was rather trying, but it, just a brief background of where I'm at. I've been in automotive almost 20 years, varied industries within that, plastics, paints, stampings, assemblies. Now I'm in rubber, so a lot of process backgrounds, and it's brought me to know quite a few recruiters. Now, this last search, I probably had it narrowed down to four or five that I was working with, you being one of them. So,
well, to pull the entire experience together, today's show, basically wanted to kind of go over the Wheeltail Solutions process, which is a personeering process. Personeer is an executive coach and recruiter, and you've had the opportunity to do some profiles on Wheeltail Solutions in the past.
Yes.
Now, Wheeltail Solutions is a life and career design web-based coaching and recruiting software, and it's used for human capital integration, and it provides the clients and the candidates a personal and organizational insight, and it implements the power of transparency. I've asked Michael Manning and Ray Skeens on the show today to go over some of the concepts of executive search, searching for your calling, your purpose in life, the power of transparency, and clearing. So it's chock full of enlightenment and life change type of experiences. So when I say the power of transparency in a web-based coaching and recruiting software, it sets up a mirror effect, and it's used for pedestaling subconscious and oftentimes conscious patterns that some are unwanted, some are wanted. And in life change, it's necessary to pedestal certain things that kind of pop up unexpected and to alleviate and clear those things off. Particularly, I think it's very useful as it pertains to whenever I recruit and place an individual and they're unaware of their patterns, and you put them into a new organization and the organization's patterns are not like they were in the employee's past, the individual employee suddenly starts popping up these patterns of these unwanted scripts, and it happens again and again. So the idea is to bring this level of transparency and pedestaling these things so that the individual has the opportunity to flow more dynamically in their new place of employment and connecting kindred spirits in business for magical results. So, Ray, you would recall the time whenever you were working in Michigan with that was an organization that was in metal stampings. It was a Tier 1 automotive, and it got involved in a lot of challenging, was it a plant turnaround?
Actually, both plants I was involved with were both plant turnarounds. One was, the first plant was a very, very large plant, considering it had about 1,200 employees plus about another 200 salary. That was, what the company had done was actually bought that plant that was losing millions upon millions of dollars a year from another major corporation. And brought me in from the quality side to help turn it around. Got it turned around, going the right way within a couple of years. And they had transferred me over to their stamping facility. Actually fed parts into this other facility.
Yeah. So, you know, when you look back into your life, what is it that attracts you to these high-challenged, high-risk plant turnarounds? I mean, what excites you about that? I know it's not for the average person.
No, it's not. It's not for the weak at heart. I think one of the things that I really like going through these type of situations is that I have an uncanny ability to handle a lot of different things going on. And when you're in the middle of a turnaround, there are several situations that are all playing out at the same time that are usually very key in making sure that the turnaround's going to happen. A smooth operating process is nice, but it's always the same thing over and over and over, which it should be. And that's the whole goal of getting the turnaround to where you are doing basically the same thing over and over. So you know what the result is that you're going to get out the other end.
So consistency.
Yeah, consistency. So I think one of the things that excites me about it is that I get to go into a state of chaos and turn it into a state of calm.
Yeah, more of a pioneer spirit than the just want to settle for the mundane.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot more challenging. I mean, for me, it's not as challenging as going into a calm situation because I am one that thrives in the middle of chaos.
Oh, cool.
So for me, it's more challenging to stay in a calm situation. Because I always want to fiddle with things and get them to change, which is not a bad thing because you still need that type of change agent. Otherwise, you don't stay consistent in the long run. But when you've been in turnarounds for as long as I have, which, like I said, has been almost 20 years, it's very tough for an individual like me to go into a plant that's calm and not fiddle too much and create too much chaos.
So you're an agent of continuous improvement, and you like to tweak and bring out the best and take it to the next level.
Yeah. And I really, like I said, when it's a turnaround situation, I'm in my world. When it's a calm situation, I very much have to watch myself that I don't overdo it.
Yeah. So you go into a new organization and you come across two different types of employees. You come across the employee who is engaging and has their attention focused on continuous improvement. And you also have come across the other employees who kind of like to stay in their comfort zone. And these two types of employees don't usually get along very well, do they?
No. No. No, the people that usually like to stay in their comfort zone are usually fairly quiet. Very rarely are they very boisterous. But you got to watch out for them because they will be at times they'll be maliciously obedient.
Maliciously obedient.
Yeah.
Sounds like they could be kind of coy, so whenever a pioneer comes in to make a difference, continuous improvement. They're the quiet ones, but if you turn your back, they might be gossiping about you. Is that what you mean by malicious?
No, what I mean by maliciously obedient is...
Okay.
You told me to do this, I did it exactly as you said, and it didn't work, and it's your fault.
Ah.
Rather than listening to what the message was. When I give out direction, I don't give out a step-by-step. I give an endpoint. And I expect people in those positions to know how to get from point A to point B already.
Got what you're saying.
Okay. If you don't, and the ones that are maliciously obedient are the ones that you have to take step-by-step. So if you just give them A to B, they just sit there and they'll sit there and they'll wait for you to take them. The other ones, though, that are engaging, you can do that. You can give them point B and they'll travel quickly to it. They may not do it correctly, but they will take the initiative, go after it, They may fail, which is not a, isn't a problem. I'd rather have somebody like that that tries and says, you know what, I screwed up, but I know what I did wrong, and this is how we do it next time.
Hey, Michael.
Yes.
So, in your experience in corporate America, have you come across as an executive also in a situation that is like a raise, and you can tell the difference between one who's inspired, understands the spirit of the message versus the letter of the law and the policies, and I can, you know, see if you can expound on that.
Sure. Before I became a clearing practitioner, I was a IT executive, and I would have people working for me. One guy that comes to mind in particular seemed to be really friendly, seemed to be on the same page with everybody, but he was really covertly trying to destroy the organization due to some of his past experiences and wounds. And it was kind of like Grave was saying, and he would outwardly, he would tell you that he was on the same page and he agreed, but he wouldn't necessarily always do things to the letter of what you told him, but sometimes he would. It would, he would do a lot of sneaky things and destroy the morale and things in the company, and you run across people like that.
I find that those are the type of people I got to take head on out in public to show that, you know what, you got to realize what my place is and you got to realize what your place is, and I'm going to where I'm going to go with or without you. And when the rest of the group that is engaging sees that, eventually that person's effectivity for being able to destroy goes away very quickly.
Yeah, that,
well, I would agree with that.
It seems that, you did basically three types of people.
Yeah.
You get the people who are present, who have their attention on the big picture, who want continuous improvement for the big picture, and they embrace the integrity and the spirit of the mission. Then you get, and you know, those are in like the top 5%. Then you get into the, oh, like say 70% who are just normal. They can be inspired. A lot of times you have to motivate them, and then they'll get on with the program. And then there's this segment that's about 20% that seem to be in the subculture, politically connected, and enjoy the gossip, and they go to work. And it's they engage it this kind of like a, what's that word, subterfuge?
I'm not sure if that's the right one, but
yeah, sabotage. Yeah, it's like sabotaging the organization. Yeah, yeah.
Because
and
if they're not sabotaging, and the reason they do is because they know they're in trouble. It's a defensive mechanism on their part.
So you say that you redress them in public?
Oh, yeah.
And those are the ones that are the squeaky wheels that sometimes get the grease because they can go run to human resources and say, oh, the bad man, oh, the bad man. And
yep. Yeah, and it's happened.
You ever had that happen to you, Michael?
No, I haven't. I guess maybe I've been fortunate, but yeah, I have addressed people in, publicly and privately, depending on the circumstances. Fortunately, I haven't had any of them go to HR complaining about me.
Great. I'd like to segue the conversation into a model called the Spheres of Existence, and I'd like to use that model because I believe it sets the foundation to address clearing, life energy clearing, at work. you have the spheres of existence, and basically stick with, there are nine of them, but we're going to basically focus on four. And it's going to look like an onion. And the first sphere is going to be self, and that's the spiritual aspect, that is the human being. The second sphere is the being's family, and the sources in the family have a tendency of writing the human being, the person's script. Whatever that person flows through the second sphere, whatever happens in the family, that life energy goes and it effects and taints. The third sphere, called work. And then the third sphere, work, you know, some people go to work to make a living. Some people live to work. They have purpose. And you can tell the difference. And the fourth sphere would be kind of the social sphere in terms of, you know, how I behave, you know, with morals. Those morals are may basically hide integrity. The being has the integrity in the first sphere, goes to the family, whatever happens in the family goes into the work sphere, whatever happens at work affects how they're socially perceived. And I want to have that foundation. Ray, you were doing you know, a great pioneering job going into these organizations where, you know, angels feared to tread. You know, following other executives who have this pioneering spirit, wanting to dynamically change work. You're doing really well, and you go into another plant turnaround following another executive, and a lot of times executives have problems with the family dynamic because the family dynamic may not be composed of a supporting and nurturing significant other. If you would, kind of share and set up the story of how you went from one plant to another, and the family support wasn't there, and how did that feel, and then you got yourself into a divorce situation, and how did that affect work?
Basically, I was working between the two plants for about 2 years, back and forth 50% at each plant. Eventually, the company made a decision to move me up there permanently. And there had always been problems at home, regardless if I was working and staying at the plant near home or being on the road at the other plant. So what, from my experience, my home life permeated into work and not the other way around. I'm pretty much able to leave the work at the work so I can be present for the family life. The situation had been brewing for years, and I had gotten married to an alcoholic who had a daughter who I love very much. The daughter was the only reason why I stayed around for as long as I did. Now, I was with this woman for 11 years, married to her for 8. When I made the one switch, the permanent switch to the other plant, I did something I probably shouldn't have done, and that was double the divorce up on top of it. Because basically I let myself get paralyzed because of what was going on, the turmoil that my life had created for me outside of work. But because it had consumed me so much, I wasn't anywhere near as effective as I usually am in those turnaround situations. So, like I said, it was more of me letting my home life intrude on my work life. And because of that, I mean, the way the home life was going, it felt like the world was out to get me. And that's exactly, I'm not saying that it was, but it certainly felt like that, that it was all out to get me, even at work, that I was getting backed into a corner.
Hey, Michael.
Yes.
Could you explain that phenomena he had experienced in an executive coach terminology from Scar on the Soul, and how that, you know, kind of interpret that?
Yeah, well, when we have stress or loss or moments of anguish, you come to conclusions, and you probably learn lessons from those incidences. And a lot of times, those lessons and conclusions that you come to are not appropriate in the current circumstances. But from these conclusions and lessons, you form principles that you live by. I had a client who, at a young age, had a traumatic event with a member of the opposite sex who happened to be very heavy set. And this set up a pattern for my client where every time the client saw a person of the opposite sex who was heavy set, my client would have this reaction that would not want to relate to that person at all or be around him. And at the time, that was a realistic or a good conclusion. But later in life, it kept my client from developing friendships or business relationships, especially with people of the opposite sex or people who were heavier set. So one thing clearing can do, is very good at allowing people to keep the lessons that you learn. A lot of times, people are afraid to give up the lessons, and because of that, they can't let go of the traumatic energy that's attached to the event. But dynamism is very good at allowing you to remember the lesson, but have it apply and look at it so that if your situation is appropriate, you'll remember the lesson. And if it's not, you know, you'll act accordingly. But it also allows you to let go of the traumatic energy, so it doesn't affect you. Oftentimes, it'll affect you unconsciously.
Yeah, very good. So, Ray, the phenomena was that you got a scar on your soul, and then you started to look at work and life as though through a darkened lens.
Yeah.
And superimposing things that weren't even there. So it was tainting your very environment.
Yeah.
All right. So you got to a point where people started to notice there was a difference in you, and they tried to help you. And then, corporations, they understand, hey, this is not the same guy. He's going through some family problems. And let's see if we can get him some professional therapy. I don't know that there's a listener on the entire planet that doesn't understand the concept of medication therapy whenever a person comes across a traumatic incident and they lose that vigor. So you would experience those types of treatments.
Yeah.
And how did it make you feel?
The therapies really did not get to the root of what was going on. Quite frankly, it helped me to sedate, I guess is the best way to describe it. The anger, the terror, the sadness, the anxieties and all of that, so that I could survive, not live.
So it was like pouring molasses over the lens and just coat
it. Yeah, I mean, it didn't, it just didn't, it wasn't drawing out of me what needed to be drawn out fast enough. And that could be because of the therapy itself, or it's probably a combination of the therapy method itself and me.
Say, Michael.
Yeah.
So with your experience and your studies when it comes to a person with a soul wound and they go to therapy, isn't that something that's done to you?
Yeah, that's one of the differences. Therapy can be invasive and, sometimes, a lot of times, and there's been books written on this, therapy can do more harm than good. Sometimes I get lucky and I get a good result. But therapy is often invasive, whereas dynamism is not at all invasive. I'd like to go back for a minute and define dynamis is the study of, well, dynamis itself is life energy. And dynamism is a practical philosophy that was founded by Enid Wien, who many people consider to be the best clearing practitioner on the planet. And dynamism is based on the study of dynamis, including its properties, creation, and its potential. Dynamism also includes the methods of healing through understanding life force and its relationship to the whole person. Dynamis clearing and coaching is based on the idea that you really do know what you are doing and what you're thinking. You just simply bury the information. And this happens because, I mean, where do people get the idea that they don't know what they're doing? Well, a lot of times their friends or other people will jokingly tell them that they don't have a clue what they're doing in some situation. Comments like this are kind of common in our society. And then we'll wind up telling ourselves the same thing and believing it. And these are all wrong indications. And one of the most effective tools in dynamism is clearing wrong indications. But in times of stress or loss or anguish, you will come to these conclusions that are no longer appropriate, and dynamism is a non-invasive way. It's a set of principles and procedures to help clear this energy.
And that's one.
Yeah, very good.
That's one of the keys with therapy. It doesn't try to even touch your life energy.
Well, if one is receiving this therapy and they're on medication, the chances are that the being is going to be present enough to use their own truth diminishes the chances with the therapy and the medication. The way I would like to kind of bring this up and pedestal this, that there's a really good story here, because what ended up happening is that the executive that Ray had followed was a very compassionate, high-powered, pioneer kind of guy, and goes, Ken, I've got a pink slip here, and this is my friend, and, I've heard you talk about dynamism clearing. So I talked him into supporting Ray's trip out to see Enid. Ray, go ahead and take it from there. I mean, I would imagine that, it's an unconventional, more of a holistic type of path. And what was going on in your mind the day that Steve had asked you to consider going out to see Enid?
I guess I was still in shock because the divorce had been over for, 3 months, maybe. It was 2 or 3 months. And I thought that I was getting back to my normal self. I think what I found out, and this is afterwards, but at the time it's like, what do you mean? And what I found out was, and this is after the trip to see Enid, was I had accepted the way I had become. That's why it felt like I was getting better.
Sure. There's this concept of wanting to fit in. Hey, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just like everybody else. And then, you know, being the herding instinct. What do you mean, go out and see Enid?
Yeah.
So you go out and you actually meet Enid.
Yep.
Go to her place. What's it feel like, you know, what's going on in your mind when you meet this lady? And you meet her husband, David Womack.
Yeah. I don't know that I went in there with any preconceptions, except that I had a goal. Okay, it was put out right in front of me, you know, like a baseball bat upside the forehead. You're not right still. You're not like you were. And you got to do something quick. So when I went out there, I didn't have any preconceptions about what I was going to go through. I went out there with the expectation that I was going to work to get back to where I needed to be. And both Enid and David got me there. I mean, David worked with me on the communication exercises, which is always a trip with David.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
Yes.
Very loving, and very powerful.
Yeah. And Enid, you know, she was the one I had the sessions with. There was the book about the wounded bird that I had read on the way out there for the second time. Now, the first time I read it was before, I don't know, it was just at the beginning part of the divorce cycle. And I read it from the perspective that, yep, that's my wife, that's my wife, that's my wife. But the second time I read it, when I was flying out there, I read it from my perspective. And that was, that's me. Uh-oh, that's me. And that was still after I thought, you know, I don't know what they're talking about, because I thought I was getting better. And I think at that point on the flight out there is when I realized, you're not any better. You just have come to accept that this is life and this is where you're going to sit. And you don't have a plan. And this, you know, this is me talking to myself, that I didn't have a plan to move on from where I was at, because I didn't know what was stopping me. And that's basically what we spent the week doing, was figuring out what was stopping me and how I was going to get by it, and ultimately how I was going to forgive myself for whatever it was that was going on.
Sure. So you said the word figure it out. Was it more like confronting it and looking at it, or kind of figuring it out?
No, I think it was more confronting.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, viewing it.
Yes.
Yeah, the practitioners of the clearing practitioner refers to a client as the viewer. So it actually allows you to confront and view instead of trying to swirl around and swim in your head and figure it out.
Right.
So,
it
does take a lot of ethics and confront to get into the case and the baggage.
It takes a lot of self-honesty. If you can't be honest with yourself, you will lose a lot going through this process. You will miss out.
Yeah, you'll gain. You won't gain it.
You
Michael. Hey, Michael.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So, explain some of this, some of how you guide the viewer to view their unwanted scripts and going through the forgiveness process. Kind of go over some of that technology.
Sure. Well, a client practitioner is a person who's been trained for years to effectively listen and assist you in regaining your own individuality your self-esteem and your determinism. A practitioner is not, we're not like a therapist or an advice giver or a psychologist. We don't use any technique that will lessen an individual's control. So we don't use hypnotism or anything at all that will lessen a person's control. We essentially just listen and guide you to discover your own point of view and to make your own decisions. We believe that nobody knows you better than you. And Enid has written that when people solve their own problems and they stand on their own 2 feet, they're much happier. So, you know, we don't believe you're broken. We just help you see what you've been doing and how it's affected your life and let you make your own decisions as to how to change that. And like Gray was saying, you do need to be honest with yourself. And a lot of, you know, it's hard to do this on your own because your mind will wander and stuff. But with a clinic practitioner, we can keep you on track and guide you through the procedures that we have and ask the right questions so that to enable you to help figure things out for yourself.
Yeah, in the executive coaching field, you ask questions. The person has their own truth. The light bulb comes on. It's the cognition. It is the truth, and it is their truth. They have ownership on it, and it folds in and basically releases the baggage, the lies, the wrong indications, the mental machinations of trying to figure, and all that just kind of gets released. And a lot of people have a true release where they start to change back to their basic nature. Ray, do you recall whenever... now, at that time, was not now, but at that time, you had not found your wife. You were still in the courtship and, you know, more like a fiancé type of relationship. Do you remember how, you know, tell us the story of how when you got on the phone with her and she could automatically know and feel the difference in your voice and the way you, I mean, kind of share that experience.
As I was going through that week, I felt like burdens were lifting off of me, but I still didn't recognize that, yes, the burdens were going away, but I didn't recognize that my presence had been changing throughout that week. But my wife, my current wife, she could tell immediately. I mean, she'd talk to my boss at work during this week and say, I don't know what they're doing out there, but he sounds a whole hell of a lot better than he did. And I don't mean just a little bit. I mean a lot. You know, it was like, this is the guy that we used to see coming up when he, you know, would be up here 1 week and down there the next. That's the guy we used to have that used to come up. Not the guy that we've had for like the last 8 months that's just got this cloud over him all the time. I mean, that she could tell that the cloud was getting lighter and that there was, it was turning partly cloudy. So, in some of the biggest changes that she could tell was I started to become even more so, more even keel, rather than going from a state of some sort of false euphoria to complete anger and blowing my stack. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I still get upset, but I don't go into
the mood swings.
The idiot's rage, yeah, the mood swing. I mean, it's just, I've always, once I've, you know, blown my stack and walked away from it, it's, you know, all done and gone, and I still can get upset, but I don't have to blow my top and scare the hell out of everybody like I let myself do before. I can be twice as effective now, and I am twice as effective now because I can stay more even keel. I can keep my head. And yes, I can still walk away after we're all done and, you know, for the most part, the situation's done and we're all kosher, so.
Awesome.
I'd like to add, I had a client about a little over a year ago, who I wish I had a before and after picture. The difference was just so amazing. He came and he was kind of all bent over. In fact, he had the whole weight on his, the world on his shoulders. And I worked with him for just over 3 days. And it looked like he had grown 2 or 3 inches. He just felt great. He was really raring to go get back to work and get back to life. And the change in his face was remarkable. People commented that he looked like 10 years younger. And he was standing up erect and not bent over. And I'm tempted to really start taking before and after pictures because the difference in him in particular was so remarkable.
And my wife said the same thing about me when I came back. Even my boss did. You know, you're not the same guy that went out there. You're the same guy that was here when we were dragging you back and forth, or close to it, but not the guy that left. Physically, you could see that I didn't look like I was wishing to be someplace else. It was just a whole different. I looked different. I sounded different. I think one of the biggest things that I did recognize from the immediate side of it, from my perspective, was things that I was afraid to confront at work before I went out there, I could go back and I could confront them and be done with it. Being in quality and being a quality manager or a continuous improvement manager, or it doesn't really matter, any type of manager, if you can't go confront a situation, you're lost. You've already lost. And the situation that I was in, I let myself get to the point where I would not go confront. I just would not do it. I had had enough of confrontation, whether it be at work, in the divorce, life in general. But after I got back from that week, there was, I could go confront. Now, I didn't take on Goliath when I first came out of the process. I've worked my way back to doing that. But at least I was able to get down the road to start confronting and keep confronting and not forget that, you know what? Better to confront it than to let it try. It's not going to linger and die unless you do confront it.
Exactly. I believe I came across one of Enid's descriptions in the communication courses that indicated that confront is the ability to be with or face. And when a person says that they are under stress, what they're simply stating is that there are things they do not want to confront. So it is the human being, the viewer, who confronts. And it's the shocks and the betrayals and the losses of the soul wound that puts that dark basket on top of the light that we need, is what is really us, the light, that does confront. So I'd say the clearing is getting your own truth, being guided, and ascended above that basket, or whatever you want to call it, that keeps us from confronting. So it gets us out of the dwindling spiral. Hey,
yeah,
Michael.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead there, Ray. You sound like you wanted to say something.
I guess what I was just going to do is say I was definitely spiraling without a safety net when I went through the process.
Yeah.
And
how many,
when I thought I was getting better, I mean, that's how much of a dichotomy was going on there. I think I'm getting better, and the whole world can see that I'm still in free fall.
So. Well, you said that last sentence again. The whole world knows.
I think I'm getting better.
You are.
Or I am now. But I had thought that I was getting better, but the whole world could see that I was still in free fall.
Ah, now I get you. Michael, you want to expound on this?
Well, yeah, when we're in overwhelm, it's hard to truly know what's really going on. And like Ray was saying, he was still in free fall, but he thought he was doing okay. And sometimes it takes some traumatic event or, you know, some people can meditate or listen to their friends and find out that they need help or that something's going on that they're not aware of. But, once they see that and they get some help, particularly with your dynamism, it can really turn a person's life around, and it can happen remarkably quick. And sometimes, a lot of times even, the emotional traumas and stuff, the baggage that we carry along can really affect our health, too. Fortunately, I don't think that was true in Ray's case, but there's been a lot of cases where people's health has gotten compromised by the baggage that they were carrying. And dynamism, well, I'm not a doctor, I can't say it can cure that, but I've certainly seen my personal experience from discussions Ken and I have had, is we've seen a lot of cases where clearing has remarkably helped somebody's health, too.
When I first met Enid, I had ulcers and asthma, and boom, they went away, because I was flowing more clear. Or life energy, the dynamism, the chi, whatever you want to call it, the dynamism is now unblocked. And no different than going to a chiropractor. They unblock the flow in a physical term. And on a spiritual basis, going from the authentic self, that life energy, that dynamism flowing through the family, it gets blocked up sometimes, and that taints our work environment. We start seeing things through a dark lens, and we don't reach, and we stay kind of clammed up, and it clams up your life energy, and you're blocked up. And obviously, it is very invigorating to have a life clearing session. I've seen a lot of great healing myself. But Ray, you weren't to the point where you could see any type of physical healing.
I don't know that it was the physical healing. I mean, I didn't have anything that physically. It was a fatigue factor. I mean, I grew up, you know, high school and college. I'd sleep 2-4 hours a day, maybe, and just run from one end of the day to the next. By the time I had been going through this, if I wasn't sleeping 10 hours, even then it was tough to get out of bed. And I always, you know, it's age. Well, it's not age, because now I'm back to sleeping like 5 or 6 hours a night and still going. So that's probably one of the biggest physical things that I experienced throughout that process, that I was able to gain back a lot more conscious time.
Sure. As far as productive energy, my goal is to provide the services for the dynamos who enjoy making a difference, pioneers that come in and do planned turnarounds to keep our companies from folding. We're in a position right now in the information age where the Industrial Revolution is over, and connecting kindred spirits in business who are dynamos, and the productive energy did increase, didn't it, Ray?
Yeah, it did.
And just think, it wasn't that long, right before you went out there, they were going to lose one of their champions, your boss, because this guy's a champion here. You know, he saved us millions of dollars in cost continuous improvement, lean manufacturing workshops, things of this nature, doing all kinds of things. The amount of billions of dollars that are being wasted on this phenomena, that's my goal, is to basically bring clearing executive coaching and into staffing and retention and organizational behavior as a recruiter and a coach.
Yeah, I'd like to add something to what Ray was saying a minute ago. One thing I've noticed is that people, sometimes people will wake up in a bad mood for no apparent reason, and that's a pretty strong indication that you have soul wounds that still need to be worked on. If you ever wake up in a bad mood, you probably have a soul wound, because that's not a natural state. It's natural to wake up in a good mood every day. And I thought that would be a very strong indicator.
I think you're right.
I apologize for laughing, because I don't know, probably the first 36 years of my life I've been waking up in a bad mood. Don't get me wrong, I still have my days, but I'd say 98% of them, no, I don't wake up to be the grumpy old guy that I used to be.
It's awesome stuff. Well, Michael, I know that you're going to head out. You've got another schedule. We're at the halftime part of the show, and what I wanted to do is acknowledge Michael Manning, the Dynamism Clearing Practitioner, and you can reach him at 805-965-2494. You can also get him on the various websites. You can go to dynamism.org. That's www.dynamism.org or bellwave.org. BELLWABE, or you can also reach him here at www.searchforcalling.com. Michael, it's certainly been my pleasure. You're just such a wonderful human being, very, very compassionate, loving, high purpose. And what's the name of your website again? The Highest Good for
my
All?
My website is Highest Good of All. HIGHESTGOODOFALL.com. It's been a pleasure being on the show, Ken. Thanks for inviting me.
It was definitely my pleasure.
Michael, it was good talking to you again.
Thanks. It was good talking to you, Ray. And say hi to your lovely wife, Fred, for me.
I will. Likewise.
All right. So, Ray.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, buddy? Oklahoma. I really want to get into some of the profiling techniques that I've got. I want to provide our listening audience a quick version of it.
Okay.
You know, our life energy flows, our dynamis. It flows, and along with others, it creates the employment condition at work. And that employment condition at work, with its groupthink, the herding instinct, trying to fit in, that mirrors back and affects our life energy flow. It's a mirror effect. And every once in a while, it's nice to come in and get a pit stop. We're on the rat race, and we go to work. And so I wanted to share with the listening audience some of the ways this profile, Will Tell Solutions, works.
Okay.
And it is not psychology. It's not designed to typecast. It is designed to get the viewer to dig into their condition at work and take a look at the unwanted patterns of groupthink and how the groupthink is affecting their flow, and refresh anything that is unwanted, get thoroughly viewed, and clearing can vanish. So what I'd like to do is, you have an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, Ray?
Yeah, I do. Go ahead.
All right. Let's take your time there. And anyone in the listening audience that would like to run this process, I believe you'll see value immediately in terms of how powerful you are in terms of how your life energy is the source that is creating your current condition. So we're going to run the standard operating process, question and answer process, that we collect and I put into the metrics in the software. It's a web-based human capital integration software. Okay, on your 8.5 by 11, okay? You got that in front of you, okay? I want you to take a look and let's go into the concept of perception of you are the viewer, the divine active intelligence, and that's your first perception. And then you have the second perception, which is your imagination and emotion.
Okay.
And this is basically the perception of soul.
Okay.
Then you have the third perception, which is logic. So that's your black and white, right and wrong, and induct logic, deduct logic. Then we have the other perception of sensory perception, where we view things in solids, cycles, seasons, things of this nature. Then we have knowledge. And, you know, this is 1 plus 1 equals 2, and things of this nature. You have five perceptions. And we want to go into the highest level of perception that we possibly can, closest to the authentic self, and it is the imagination and emotion. Are you with me there, Ray? You grasp that, okay. So once you have the impression of being at work, and everybody can do this, have the impression of being at work, get the imagine the people that you work with, the material flows, the timing, the schedules, the goals, the machinery, the printers, the copiers, get that impression of actually being at work. Okay, now, I want you now to get the impression of being about 50 yards up in the sky and looking down on your place at work. And tell me when you're there.
Okay.
All right, good. Now, imagine that the rooftop is that sheet of paper.
Okay.
Right. Now draw me a circle that represents your life energy in that space. You got that?
Yep.
All right. Now, you can take a real quick, I like to measure this circle shape. I'll start with shape. And in the shape of it, it's going to have one of three shapes. If it looks like an egg on its side, that's going to be elliptical. Or if it looks like a circle like an orange, you know, or it's going to have an oval like a face. Describe the shape of that.
I guess it's like the oval.
All right. So when you say yes, does it actually appear to be oval like a face?
Depends on how I'm holding the paper.
Yeah, of course. So, in the view that you've got right now, is it closer to a really skinny face or to a round? Is it somewhere between round and oval?
It's I mean, it's oval. I mean, it's pretty much a whole sheet.
So. Okay, good. All right. So, the idea here is that if you had a circle. I believe I ran this on you about 4 or 5 years ago, and the circle shape was, it had waves and was kind of like a egg on its side. It had waves in it.
Yep.
Now, looking at your circle shape now, does it have waves in it?
Yeah, it's got some.
Okay. And is it larger than the one that you drew about 5 years ago?
Probably.
Yeah, I remember.
I'm trying to remember. I think so, yeah, because I only used a half a sheet last time.
All right. So we're going to get an impression of what you're basically, how you feel. So you are more, you feel more dynamic at work than you did before clearing.
Yes, I do.
Now, the listening audience, if you want to take a look at this theory, if a person is suppressed or they're not engaged, the circle shape is going to be more egg-like on its side, elliptical, indicating that you're going to want to communicate more horizontally. You're going to feel safer horizontal communication, like, oh, he's like me, he's like me. May not communicate up and down or around you. And this is what Spinoza talks about, how our view, our life energy, splits into pain, and that would be the elliptical size type of circle, or pleasure, which is the oval type circle that Ray drew. Obviously, we as human beings, we want to find balance, so we try to fit in, and the perfectly round circle wouldn't be perfect, but the round circle is the individual who's trying to communicate pretty much in a group all around him. May not want to communicate too high up or down to the lower in the ranks. Does that make sense to you, Ray?
Yep.
Okay. And if you get a very high dynamic, idealistic, visionary type of individual who has more goals and has seen the ability to communicate up and down, that individual is going to have more pleasure, and they're going to be more, they're going to have a faster type of more volume in their life energy, so to speak. So what we're going to call that circle is going to be called radius. Now let's get into the size. Now we got the shape of it. Why don't you give it about a, give it about a 7, okay? From 0 to 10, give that shape a 10. Excuse me, a 7.
Okay.
You got that?
Yeah.
All right, let's go into the actual, go ahead and flip that. Flip that over, okay?
Okay.
All right. For anybody in the listening audience, we're going to be able to differentiate and see the difference here. Let's do the same thing. Okay. Most of you are at your house, or you have a sense of ownership there. Have the impression of being about 50 yards above your place right now, if you're in your house. You can imagine that you're in your house with your family and friends and such. Go about 50 yards above that and pretend that the sheet of paper now is the roof looking down on your house, and then draw me a circle that represents your life energy in that space.
Okay.
All right, well, good. The ability to differentiate is what I'm looking at, sharing here. The majority of these profiles, those two circle sizes and shapes between the second sphere of existence called family and at work, they're generally different. If they're the same, then that's pretty strong.
Okay.
Generally speaking, the average person is going to have some differences there. It's very subtle. Go ahead and describe the circle size and shape that you got there in the second drafting.
It's more of a circle. It is about the same width, diameter as the oval, but it's not as it's more of a circle.
All right. So when you're at work, you're more goal-driven. When you're in your house, you're more relaxed and more balanced.
Yeah.
Okay, so there, you don't have a lot of ideals and goals that you're trying to manifest right now in the house. But this is so simple. Very simple stuff. It's very simple. But the idea of getting to the authentic self and getting a impression of it is key, because it allows the viewer to be able to differentiate between their life energy flows. Does that make sense to you?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, so why is it different?
The goals and all of that are pretty immediate at work right now. From the home part of it, I don't know that the goals are as immediate. They're definitely not as strenuous. There is a difference. I mean, yeah. It's just a much more relaxed atmosphere, and it doesn't have to be high pressure, all that. But I mean, had I drawn this circle 6 months ago, it would probably been the other way around.
Yeah, see, it's not psychology designed to typecast and say this is what you are. This is basically allow me to kind of pick up on certain things that, as a staffing consultant, I need to get the client to visualize what's going on, because it's so subtle.
Yep.
Okay. Now, let's take a look at these circle sizes and shapes. Let's go back to the one at work, and you get a 7 in terms of shape. And in inches, what do you got in terms of inches? About what, 7 or 8, maybe 9 inches?
Height-wise, yeah.
Okay.
9.
Okay, so it's going to give you a 16. You divide that by 2, and it's going to give you what's called radius of an 8.
Okay.
Now, 80%. You just put down 80%. And that, right now, is going to represent the lens. Now, let's go to the bulb. The bulb within this, I'm going to call this a dynaphysic. It's just modeling of using metaphors. Now, let's talk about that the bulb is the viewer, the divine act of intelligence, and it flows life energy from this concept of a bulb. Now, let's go into the scoring of that.
Okay.
How many hours do you put into work on the average? 8 to 9, 9 to 10, 10 to 11, 11 to 12, 12 to 13 per day?
Oh, it's 10 to 13. It depends.
All right. So basically, you can spend time at work with the support and nurturement of the family and be the pioneer and work, 11 to 12 on the average.
Yeah.
All right. So let's give that a score of an 8. So we're going to go 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So let's give that an 8. For the 10 would be the person who's doing the 12 to 13 hours consistently.
Okay.
All right, so you got an 8 there also. Now let's go over into how your life energy looks at life as though it's a game, and we talk about flow in terms of being stuck or spiral radius, or we can say specific, or we can say regional, or steady, or we can say strong. Now, in life, look at all the opportunities here in this mortgage board of life. If we're stuck, that means we won't let go of our house. We, really want to cling to this, and we've got, other sources that, are right in our script, and, we don't, we're kind of stuck there. So there's a smorgasbord of opportunities we could possibly go out and interview on and expand our career and our calling, right?
Yeah.
So I ask you a question. As an executive recruiter, are there any places that you cannot work in terms of relocating?
Not anymore, because I moved to the last place I wanted to.
Well, we can easily say that your life energy is more expansive, more dynamic, and you take up more space in terms of the game of life. Like if it was a game board, you're not stuck to a 50-mile radius.
No.
That would be like a 1. If you say, within a 200-mile radius, that's like a 3. If you say, outside that 200-mile radius, there are certain places specifically I can go to, and that would be like a 5. If you're in a regional area, like, say, I'll stay in the Midwest or the Southeast or the Pacific coast, that's going to give you a 7. If you say, I'm totally open, that's going to give you a 9. So those...
I would have to say that I was open because, like I said, I moved.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I started the process, I was probably a lot more reserved and where I wanted to go, but I ended up moving to a type of climate that I don't like. It's hot.
But you get the idea. What we're looking at is the bulb is going to flow in terms of space and time.
Yep.
So we're picking up another very subtle, very close to the truth of what your life energy volume and flow is. So
yep.
We're looking at the bulb. We're going to call that passion. So yep. we're going to look at passion. That life energy is taking up a lot of time. It's invested and engaged in a lot of time at work. It's more dynamic. And it takes up and able to go to more places, right?
Yes.
That is very subtle, but it indicates volumes to me as an executive recruiter and to my clients in terms of how dynamic you are. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. So we're going to get a 9, and then we're going to get a 9. That's going to be an 18 divided by 2 equals 9. Then you take your 9 of passion with your 8 of radius, okay? You take your radius of 8 plus 9 is going to give you a 17, and you divide that by 2, and it's going to give you what?
8.5.
Yeah, 8.5, 85%er. Okay, in terms of just the first thing the viewer, the divine act of intelligence does, the bulb, so to speak, it does flow life energy, and then it goes through the lens, and it takes up a lot of time and space, and it's dynamic. That tells me how to classify dynamos or pioneers from, you know, people who are more present, who are more able to integrate their spirit and perception and abilities at work.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so let's flip the table around and say that you're a human resources staffing person or a hiring manager, and I provide you the resume on an individual, and I've given you that very simple thing right there that indicates a whole lot of information because it's so close to the truth. The being is the truth. You are the viewer, right?
Yes.
And you're looking at the resume, there's the technical qualifications, but you want to get a kind of feel of their tech, their soft skills, right?
Yes.
All right. So you look at the resume, and you look at that, you take the passion and the radiance together, and it's called magnitude, okay? So you look at the resume, and then you look at that very simple foundation of Wheeltail Solutions, and there's about 7 other things that we run through there. And what do you end up getting when you see the resume in that magnitude?
An individual that should be able to fit within the circumstances that are at the plant at that point.
Should be able to fit in at the top.
Okay. It should be the type of individual that helps that's in a position to help you get the plant, the business, the whatever to where it needs to go.
Yeah, that's a real mover and shaker is what it tells you.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're the hiring manager, and you're going to be looking to staff pioneers to do plant turnarounds, make a difference, keep this plant from closing its doors. It's pretty valuable information. Okay. Also, what you're looking at is doing the same profile with the hiring manager and various other people on his staff and sharing that with a candidate so that they get a good feeling for all of the metrics that we're talking about, and they're going to get a better feeling for how they would match.
Yes.
So you get a level of transparency there.
Yes.
Okay. Now, then we would get into other questions about control and influence. Questions on control would be the ability, when I say control, Ray, I mean, you know, can you start something like a project? Can you change that project? And could you close it and put it in and, you know, bring it to an end? So when I say control, it means control. Start, change, and stop.
Okay.
It's like a car. You start it, you change it, you stop it. Got that?
Yep.
So, you know, in that, how does one go about if you're, as a hiring manager, wanting to see how much control and influence that person has, right?
Right.
Because the magnitude's already going to show you a whole lot about that individual's influence, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're high influence is what I'm picking up on.
Okay.
Now, so, the question on control would be, that's a good question to ask any listener looking at these 5 questions. Do you believe that there is predestiny and that we're not responsible, that there's this concept of, it's really not my individual choice. It's basically, it's destined. That would be question one that one could pick, or one could say, well, it's kind of like, you know, maybe 30% is my plot in life, my condition in life, where I'm at in life. It's not so much predestined. Maybe it's like 30% I'm doing it, and it's been my choice, the domino effect of everything that's ever happened in my life. I'm going to put myself here. I mean, I'm about 30% of that. What the other percent is, 70% of my condition or my plot in life has been destiny and being influenced by other sources. Then some people will say, well, it's kind of 50-50. You got those three?
Yep.
Okay. Then some people will say, well, 70% where I'm at in life, you know, what's happened to me in my life, where I'm at right now in life, 70% has been my choice. And there's, you know, 70% has been affected by other sources and the concept of destiny. You got that one?
Okay. Yep.
And then there's the taking the full responsibility, saying there really isn't any destiny, and I'm source, and I'm the product of everything I've ever thought, whether it's, and my condition, my plot in life is 100% I did it.
Okay.
And of those five, they go from 0 to 100% destiny to 30% my choice, 70% destiny, 50-50,
yeah.
30. So those five, which one would you choose? And when you look at your life, where you're at right now, where you've been, the good and the bad.
It's all been because of me.
Yeah.
It's been the choices that I've made.
Yeah. Now, watch. If you come across circle size and shapes, they're down in the 25% in the passion range and the magnitude range, 25%. That influence usually does indicate what, generally speaking, people who kind of believe in this concept of destiny, and I really don't have a choice, we're just a stick in the river, and, you know, God may be this way, and, you know, I'm kind of like a... So your circle size and shape and passion, your magnitude, came in at, what, 85%?
Yep.
Well, it's no surprise to me that you would say the top one.
Yeah. It I truly believe that.
Yeah.
You are what you make of yourself.
Sure. To the one who's more present, operates above some of the illusions of...
Yeah.
He did it to me, or she made me do it. That kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so
don't get me wrong. I've been to that side of the spectrum, too. But
do I have to?
I mean, today? No. Even when I was in the other side of the spectrum, as I reflect back on it from now, I was there because I put myself there. I
sure.
created the situation, so...
Wasn't that long ago, it felt like it was happening to you, didn't it?
Yeah, but I was making all the excuses in the world. I mean, that's the difference between a person of, quote-unquote, destiny. Their excuses. As a person on the at the top end saying, you know what? No. I'm in the cesspool because I put my own butt here. And I can change where I'm at. I may not succeed this time, but I will succeed.
Yeah. Totally understand. How many people do you think, if we take a look at the 6 billion people on the planet, okay?
Yep.
How many people out there would have the circle size shapes, passion, things of this nature, that, and say, I did it. And I am the product of everything I ever thought. I can't blame it on the boss. How many people truly do see it like the archer as the source and says, well, I can't blame the target. It was my decision to go there or connect with that person. I can't blame the wind. I can't blame the bow or the arrow. How many people truly embrace the empowerment level of full responsibility on this planet?
A very small percentage, anywhere from 5 to 10%.
All right, so when you're the hiring manager and you're looking for quality managers,
yep,
or any professional, you see the resume, right?
Yep.
Okay. How would you like to be able to classify what type of dynamo you're getting there, or type of human, you know, be able to share these profiles with the talent stream and use this type of technology in human capital integration?
Well, it'd be extremely useful because, I mean, not every situation requires that top 5 or 10%. I may need a top 20, top 30 percenter.
Maybe you need a guy that, yeah.
I mean, when it's a calm situation, I don't need a top 5. I can get away with a 20 and believe that that'll be enough influence to keep things running and to improve upon those things.
Yeah.
Because at that point, that's where I can step in to help guide that individual, that extra 10-15% of where the process, the plant, or the company needs to go at that point.
Sure. You want to see something using, write down these words. These are the actual measuring of a condition of work. We use certain words. We'll pick up yields, and I call them yields because the way we write these words down will give you, the hiring manager or the candidate, an opportunity to look inside of the culture and measure and score culture indices that are ever-changing. Write these 5 words down. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Security.
Okay.
Advancement. Work delight.
Work delight?
Yeah, work delight. Okay. Happy going to work and contributing.
Okay. All right.
Money.
Mula.
Okay. And integrity. Rapport is a good word for it. I said to say rapport.
Okay.
Okay. You got those 5 words?
Yes.
Okay. Repeat them back to me.
Security. Advancement. Work delight. Money. And rapport.
Sure. And then put them in order in terms of what's most important to you. Like a totem pole.
Okay.
You get a stacking sequence of your motivations.
Yes.
Okay. Imagine that your life energy flows through the lens, and the lens has the imagination and emotion in it. And let's just say that those 5 things right there is what your life energy has to flow through, which literally manifests and creates scorable employment conditions.
Okay.
All right. And it's subconscious. Person not even aware of it, but they do stack and form yields of productive energy and contribution. So give it back to me. Go
in the order I I ranked them.
Number one would be this. Number two would be that.
Number one was work delight.
Okay.
Two was rapport.
Okay.
Three was money.
Good.
Four was advancement. And five was security.
Okay. Isn't that curious? What do you think those motivation stackings will manifest in terms of contribution to work?
Say the question again.
What do you think those, I've got actual, again, I use the word dynaphysics. It's just simply putting metrics on motivation sequence. It's the study of motion and emotion at work for capital human integration. I just say that if a person's motivated predominantly by work delight, okay, that's going to give it a score. And then rapport is going to give it a score. And however these are stacked will actually give a score.
Okay.
And so you got a score that tells me, the personeer, a whole lot. A whole lot.
I'm sure when I did this 5 years ago, it was completely different.
It was different. I remember you had advancement as number one.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me run with the listening audience here.
Okay.
Let's put different words on these. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Before I do that, though, just say that work delight equals love.
Okay.
Okay. And it scores out very high in terms of contribution.
Okay.
That person's life energy flow is going to contribute more to that condition. Because it is the life energy flows that create those conditions, right?
Yep.
Okay. So when you have a person's flowing work delight, and their motivation is love, is what that is. They want to mentor. They want to take their God-given talents and give them back and be self-actualized. The concept of Maslow says, once you get to a certain stage in the stage of life, you know, you've got your security and all these things, then you start self-actualizing and giving back and reproducing yourself into others. And their light bulb comes on, and it puts bread on people's tables and it's a ripple effect. There are people right now, Ray, who are thriving because of the tools that you've given them in continuous improvement, lean manufacturing. People right now have more tools that you've given back. The ripple effect is you're putting bread on people's tables right now that you don't even know. Does that make sense?
Yep.
That's by being self-actualized and the love of giving back.
Okay.
So that gives you a pretty high score in terms of your number one motivator because your life energy has to flow through that motivation. Does that make sense?
Yep.
That's love. Okay.
I gotta love what I'm doing, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
If I don't even like it, I just you sit there and you wither.
Yeah, there's a little difference between like and love, and actually like is E. When I say I like you, that means core to core our integrity levels match. When I say integrity, what I mean is the old Venn diagram where you put two circles intersecting and there's a football in the middle.
Yep.
The larger the football, right, the more rapport, the more engagement, the more we like because our levels of integrity are like.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, so that's the highest. Okay? That's the magician archetype.
Okay.
Got it?
Yep.
You just call that integrity. So love, integrity. Okay? Then?
Yep.
So you've got work delight equals love, and rapport means integrity. Well, you know, I can't tell you the magic of rapport in terms of how it feels. I can know the formula of it. It means basically no hidden agendas, integration. We are as one in spirit, integrity.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it really does. Okay, so let's go down to the next one. That's money, right?
Sure.
Okay. Now, money is a currency of trust. Look at the back of an American dollar bill, United States dollar bill, and it will say, "In God we trust." You don't do business with people you don't trust.
Right.
Trust is earned from integrity. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right, so people that are creating scarcity basically scared to trust. Thus, they don't have as many exchanges of currency of trust. Thus, you catch that?
Yep.
That is money. So money is just solid trust, and it is a currency. Okay? The more walls we put up, the less rapport we have, the less people can engage with us, then obviously what happens? Our productive energy is blocked because these barriers, these life energy barriers, we're blocked behind that. And this is what we do. We basically get the person to dissolve and resolve and face, trace, and erase those things. And what ends up happening is they start creating abundance in relationship and various other dynamics, okay?
Yep.
So we already know that you've got a CE. I do this mathematically. They do create yield. Okay, what's next? B.
It was advancement.
Yeah, that's advancement. Now, when I say advancement, okay, just put down the word power.
Okay.
Now, power is like politics. This is where we get the I want to fit in. I don't want to lose my position. I don't want to lose with power, politics, and respect, okay? And respect is a form of love, which is a lower harmonic of it. It deals with, does that make sense?
Yep.
So if you have anyone out there that says, advancement's number one, but generally speaking, the individual is, you can pretty much count on that person is going to have more of a spiral flow in their communication. And again, when our communication flows, go from stuck to spiral to jagged, passionate and, specifics and dealing with specifics and logics and stuff like that. And then it goes up to steady, then strong. Okay?
Okay.
So we're going to, then security. Now, a security motivated person is going to be stuck. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
Okay. They're going to be, people who like to kind of cling and hold and stay in the comfort zone and kind of settle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they do a lot of hiding.
Yes, they do. You'll find a lot of them are into the data.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Careful.
But all five of these are what we all five have. It's just simply a matter of stacking it in terms of now. Not to say that, if, just like Maslow says, if one of the top motivators is taken away, don't be surprised if you have a fall down into the knowledge and the data and the figure it out stuff.
Sure.
These are not psychology. This is basically how life energy flows through these five motivators.
Yes.
Okay. Then everyone has and possesses all five. It's just simply,
yes,
how do you stack them now?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's look at that. Okay, so if you wanted to, you could take a look at this and just say, knowledge, power, and write these down. Knowledge, power, love, trust, freedom.
No.
Each one of these will give you a yield of productive energy. You do enough of these profiles with the magnitudes that we've already done, you're going to get a really good system that doesn't typecast, but is a transparency profile that you can broadcast into your specific targeted talent stream so that folks can be attracted to work there because of the transparency. They know what they're getting into.
Yes.
And vice versa. So it's a circuit of human capital integration. And you do one of these, once a quarter, and you broadcast this out on your internet site, and it's basically a rapport technology because rapport is based on transparency. The culture indices are now scorable. Now look at that. Knowledge, power, love, trust, freedom. That's how we all evolve our soul. It's kind of like Maslow. We start at, knowledge, and we go up to power because knowledge gives you power. And you let go of the power trip and the politics, and you start going to mentor, then you become more knowledgeable and powerful by letting go of the knowledge and power. And then you become more abundant and more open. Then people trust you more, and then obviously you make more money, and obviously it does indicate something in terms of a sequence of evolving the soul, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, there's archetypes in here also.
I've learned a lot over the last 3 years that if I just focus more on what I was doing and the operational goal that I was going after, The other stuff came in behind it.
Sure.
And even when I was, and I learned more of that when I tried to change my career, you know, 3 years ago, to get into the insurance business. Now, I didn't like insurance, didn't love it either. Hence why I'm back doing what I'm doing. But I had never, even when I was in that business, all my district managers or state managers or all those guys are like, focus on this, this, and this. And it's like, you know what? If I just do what I'm supposed to do by helping people getting the right product, then all this stuff will come. And that was my approach to it, but again, it lacked passion, so, you know.
Sure.
So you got the other portion of it, but my approach to it was correct. My passion just wasn't there for it.
Yeah. Passion is work delight, is love.
Yes.
See how you've done a little bit of life design. Now you've got enough of a model to understand how to orientate and life design towards purpose.
Right.
Suppose you put these next five words down and tell me which one you feel in this unit, in this time of your life.
Okay.
Which one do you feel you're operating more of? And your purpose to be here on the planet. You know, things of this nature can now be revealed. Pretty exciting, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. And we're going to look at designer. Write that word down. Demonstrator.
Okay.
Developer.
Okay.
Deliverer.
Deliverer. Okay.
Dealer.
A dealer.
Yeah. Words.
Hmm.
So you look at that, okay?
Yep.
Mathematically, based on the dynaphysic that I've created here, these concepts of quantifying life energy into conditions and the conditions mirroring back on the person's purpose is where I'm at right now.
Okay.
It's horrible. Would be nice to be able to understand. What are you doing here? What's your calling?
Sure.
Now, think of source must have a design, right?
Yes.
Must develop too, right?
Yes.
Must demonstrate, right?
Yes.
Must deliver and deal too, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, which of those five words resonate with you? What are you doing here?
I'm
on this rock out in the middle of
nowhere.
Well, it's a little bit off the beaten track of current.
I am probably in designer mode.
Designer. Now, designer is the creator. That would be rapport oriented. Demonstrator is like the person who's love. So dealer is in the levels of power.
Okay.
Deliverer is the person of production. Designer, dealer, demonstrator, developer. So you start to get some sequences that go in correlation here, don't you?
Yes, you do.
And they start to reveal purpose and callings.
Yes.
They're not mental, are they?
No.
They're the viewer of the divine act of intelligence, and they're not locked or framed. And they can change, can't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, life design. Yes, they do change, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, but whatever we put our attention and energy on grows. Think about that. Whatever you put your attention and energy on grows, but if you don't have a map or a life design or ability to score mathematically and quantify where you're at in the life stages, where you're at work, and the sublimation or the clearing processes to get rid of the baggage, so that your golden nuggets, these five things, can become the surface, then you can't put your attention and energy on them, can you?
No, you can't.
Okay, let's look at you are the viewer. You're the divine act of intelligence. You're the sun. And your sun is like rays of life energy. Let's say that your golden nuggets are now on the surface, and you put your attention and energy on those, right?
Yep.
Now you can create abundance. You don't have to hide your talents in the earth. You don't have to put a bushel basket. You can reveal. You can be open. You can flow bigger. And now we have the ability and the technology of WillTel Solutions in the staffing, in the manpower, air-proofing manpower, the root of all economies. We've got the stem. So what do you do with that? Well, you hire people. You bring on people who are more enlightened to purpose, who want to contribute. You don't want to typecast people, you know, because all these five things change. But think about it. Whatever you put your attention and energy on grows. Now, let's just give you another analogy here. If you're looking at your strengths, and you know what your strengths are, right? Yeah, continuous improvement, you know, all the good things that you do that are shown technically on a resume, right?
Yep.
Imagine everything like that is now a rose. You're the sun. Put your attention and energy on your rose, and the weeds don't get the sun, and those are the weaknesses, and they just kind of trickle away.
Yes, they do.
So a good life design coach isn't going to sit there and judge you or evaluate and pick on your weaknesses. What they're going to do is they're going to acknowledge your strengths, have you put your attention and energy on your strengths, define purpose, calling, and you grow, and you expand, and you're connected with other kindred spirits that appreciate the revelation in business.
Yep. That is true.
So looking at this, we've got error-proofing. And we have, what are all economies based on? Manpower is the root, then the material, then the machinery, then the money, right? The four M's, right?
Yep.
So we have error-proofing systems on all of them, except for one.
Pretty much.
To what we do now.
Yeah, we do. Using this system, this would tell me a lot more about a person than I've traditionally, you go by gut feel when you go through the interviews. And I've been stung by somebody, I mean, several times. I mean, not just once or twice, but you can get stung by somebody who talks a good game, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's because it's got the put on to fit in.
Yeah.
It's the old put on to fit in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they want to get into the... Now, I've seen way too many high-powered people like yourself who come in to pioneer, make a difference, and have to deal with people who are got the put on to fit in the hurting instinct of the negative group think doing things they would never do had they owned their own business as an employee.
Most of those people would never own their own business.
Well, they have
a
security paradigm. Right, risk.
They wouldn't take the risk.
No, they wouldn't take the risk, and they're trained to be employees, and they're trained to fit in and play politics. And it wastes trillions of dollars in our flattened global economy. What I say is we have a technology will tell solutions, and it will tell you not to typecast and say that you are ENTJ, extrovert, intuitive, thinking, judgmental. You know, then you're nice in that little box there.
Yeah.
You can't data mine that information. You cannot broadcast that information. It is stuck information. This is a dynamic, ever-flowing circuit between an organization out to a targeted talent stream to attract into the rapport of what's really going on inside there.
Yeah.
So your turnover is increased. Your turnover is diminished. Your interview expenses are cut in half.
Yes.
You get succession planning. You get coaching. You get the opportunity to make a difference. Because here in the United States, what we're suffering from is that we're in the information age, and the information age leads to the empowerment age. And people need to basically don't need to, but they may want to wake up that there is no security. We cannot compete with the security paradigm of an industrial revolution. There is no gold watch at the end of this rainbow.
No, there truly is no security.
It's an illusion.
Period. Unless you create it for yourself.
You create it.
You've got to create it within yourself.
Let's do empowerment and having a stacking sequence like you, where you go to an organization, Ray, your essence creates security. You're putting bread on people's tables because you're not security motivated. You don't fall into the trap of the group think hurting with the masses. So, think about that.
Oh, I'm definitely out there by myself sometimes. But
sure
I have
you
to
are.
Be. I have to.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know. So I'm looking at globally, here in the United States of America, we have an industrial revolution paradigm, but we're in the information age, which means we're consultants. There is no security. So it's up to the corporations to embrace the transparency of human capital integrations, that coaching and recruiting, things of that nature, to unfold the person's purposes and the group's purposes, the self-interdependent concept. Now, you know and I know, our economy is basically ill from the illusion of not being able to air-proof manpower. There's too much turnaround. There's too many plants folding.
Yeah.
So my purpose is basically to continue providing human capital integration, this levels of transparency, so the companies know exactly how to attract the right people.
Right.
And the companies know exactly what's going on inside these corporations so that they can reach and fulfill their calling and be engaged and put their attention on the mission statement, put their alignment on the people. See, Ray, what happened to you about 3 years ago happens to a lot of people.
I'm sure it does.
Oh, it does. I've seen a lot of high-powered people come in, do the right thing. See, the difference between leadership and management is leaders will do the right thing like you've done. The managers, well, you had to pay them to do things right. And our economy can't really sustain if we don't know how to differentiate. So this is a differentiation profile. Well, this is about the end of the show, Ray. I simply wanted to go over the information of how to reach EnidVN, dynamism.org. Michael Manning can also be reached there. This has been a very great show. I appreciate you as my guest.
Hey, not a problem.
You can reach me for any executives interested in this type of technology. You can reach me at 877-222-1492. My name is Ken Payne. I am the first person here, and I can certify these processes with individuals who are interested in becoming a person here, which is a life design coach and recruiter with WillTel Solutions Software. It's been my pleasure. Ray, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Hey, just be good out there.
Yeah. Well, this is Ken Payne. Hello, world, and I'm here to help you search for your calling. It's www.searchforcalling.com.